This podcast is supported by JBS International Incorporated through a grant award from the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, with 0% finance with non-governmental sources. The contents are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement, by HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government. For more information, please visit HRSA.gov.
Welcome to another episode of Rural Roads, the RCOR podcast. I'm your host, Aisha Tilakamara, and thank you for joining us for part three of Dr. C's four-part mini-series. On today's episode, we'll talk to Dr. C about xylazine. Thank you for tuning in. Dr. C, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm well. So we'll just go ahead and get started. So, drug checking data indicates that xylazine has become more common in the drug supply in various parts of the country. To start, what is xylazine and why is it in the drug supply?
Good question. Xylazine is an anesthetic agent or a sedative that is used in veterinary medicine. It has probably always been in the drug supply to some extent, but not in a large scale or in large geographic areas here and there. For a little while, comes and goes. We don't have a lot of good historical data on it because we haven't been checking for it. We don't check for it when we do urine toxicology screens in a therapeutic environment. We don't check for it in emergency cases. The coroners aren't looking for it. But it's become more prevalent over time, the last few years, and more encountered in more geographic areas. It's following the same kind of pattern fentanyl did 5 to 10 years ago, as far as it appears. We notice it, we see it spreading. The drug checking data thing that's new and different is that there's more like on the street checking the unregulated drug supply before and while people are using it. And people are getting more tools to check their own drugs before they consume them. And so we're getting population level from the frontline data that I think is pushing the testing in clinical settings and in like coroners adding it and so on to get a better handle on how much of it's out there.
So what are some of the concerns or side effects of xylazine use and why is it becoming so popular or more popular?
I didn't really answer your question about why it's in the drug supply, but so I'll try to do that and why it's becoming popular first.
All right.
The business model for supplying drugs in the unregulated drug market is driven by unknown things. It divorced, especially the opioid market, from agricultural limitations because you used to have to grow poppies and process them to turn it into heroin to get it on the street. And now they can just use chemicals and create fentanyl, and it's tiny amounts. They just bulk up with random stuff and put it out there. And so xylazine is maybe just part of that trend, where they're trying to create a unique product or bulk up their fentanyl. It's not, I don't know that we'll ever really know the whys and wherefores. And I'm not so sure I would call it popular. People don't have a lot of control over what they're consuming. So if they wanted to avoid it, it might be hard to. I think that when a drug is in the community, people do communicate about its effects with one another. So if somebody did want to have an experience that included the effects of xylazine, there are ways to find out which drugs that are being sold right now are likely to have it. Now, the way that it changes the experience of using an opioid is it creates additional sedation. So whereas you might feel kind of blurry if it's just the opioid, the xylazine will make you just like really sleepy or asleep. Now, fortunately, you can still reverse an overdose with naloxone, even if xylazine is present, but people may not come around, not get as alert as quickly as they would have if the xylazine weren't present. So concerns about side effects. The number one side effect is it causes wounds in the skin. And this can happen even if you're not injecting it. And the wounds can happen in places not where you're injecting. Maybe in your arm, you get a wound on your leg. And the wounds are at their risk for infection. They're just horrible. People get wounds for lots of different reasons, and they're bad. And these are very unpleasant to have and painful. The other thing is that chronic exposure to it might possibly, the evidence is not established really clearly for humans, but might possibly do things like suppress your bone marrow, suppress your immune system, things like that. The other thing is that there is a fair amount of veterinary literature, and you can't directly extrapolate studies on animals to what will happen in humans, but they have studied it as an anesthetic and looked at it in pregnant animals. And it does potentially, it does appear to have some harmful effects on the pregnancy, possibly on the development of the baby animal. I don't know that we'll ever be able to really study that on humans. It'd be great if somebody could start collecting data. This is part of why we need to know who's being exposed to it. So those are the concerns, the main concerns with xylazine.
And with those concerns, how do you think we can reduce risk associated with xylazine use among people who use drugs?
As a society, we have a responsibility to get a better understanding of the impacts on a person's body so that we can help them with side effects. We need to give them the tools to determine whether xylazine is in the drugs that they're using. So similar to fentanyl test strips, something like a xylazine test strip would be good, so that people can make decisions, informed decisions in their own best interest, informed by their own preferences about whether they are going to risk exposing themselves to this or not. The other thing is we probably need to be reaching out beyond people who use opioids, because there's every reason to think that this is also in other parts of the drug supply. And so people who, you know, are maybe not paying attention to this might need to be aware of it in terms of paying attention to how it affects their health and their ability to function. I think it would be a good idea to help make sure that women of reproductive age have access to contraception of their choosing while they're using drugs, regardless of whether there's xylazine in it. I think that the risk of xylazine exposure maybe should light a fire under us as far as increasing our efforts to make sure that people have access to the contraception of their choosing. That would be an important risk reduction step.
And in what ways may xylazine have unique impacts on rural communities specifically?
Part of the concern is in rural communities, of course, is not using drugs alone. And now that we have an additional agent in the unregulated drug supply that can impact people, it's just that much more important that they not use alone, that there be someone there who can help them if they experience an overdose. I haven't seen evidence that you're more likely to overdose if you have xylazine, because it's pharmacologically different, but it certainly doesn't help. And it's actually dangerous people if they're unconscious or semi-conscious for an extended period of time. I've had patients who were just on the floor for 36 hours and they woke up with huge pressure ulcers or things like that, just not using alone. And the other thing is, I'm afraid that big challenge for rural communities is that we really need to be consistently testing, particularly in overdose fatalities and overdoses that come to the ER. We should be checking to see if this is, and that costs money. It costs money, it requires new policies, it requires changes to your workflow and so on. And then somebody has to look at the data and report it. And those sound like kind of straightforward things, but they can be big lifts when you're on a tight budget and tightly staffed.
And I know you shared one example, but could you expand on your experience with this drug as a physician?
Yeah. So I gave the example of the poor person who got pressure ulcers because they were semi-conscious for such a long time. I think the other example would be someone who didn't realize she was being repeatedly exposed to xylazine for an extended period of time and was just feeling tired all the time and just having trouble concentrating and just weak. And then she got pale and she started developing rashes. And because she didn't know she was having this toxic exposure and her doctor didn't know she was having this toxic exposure, it took them a long time to find out that she actually was, her immune system and her bone marrow were both suppressed. So her body wasn't making red blood cells, wasn't making the cells you need to have a healthy immune system. And had it gone on unchecked, she would have died. So the diagnostic quandary for these severe exposures and the lack of data that can help healthcare providers recognize and understand what to do when somebody's had chronic exposure to a drug like this is a big problem.
Thank you for this information, Dr. C. Do you have any last words or any comments before we wrap up today?
I guess there was a really good article in 2022 that provides a nice summary. I think we have a link in the best practice to that one. And then I would just say, you know what, folks, don't give up. Don't get discouraged. It's one step at a time.
Thank you all for tuning in. We look forward to the final episode with Dr. C, eliminating the data waiver. Thank you all.